Okay, so let's go ahead and call the October 2nd meeting of the Mill Creek City Council to order. And we begin with the Pledge of Allegiance, which will be led by Mill Creek Troop 120.
Please join in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands,
one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Two.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Roll call?
I got roll call. Mayor Pruitt?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Holtzclaw?
Here.
Councilmember Bond?
Here.
Councilmember Todd?
Here.
Councilmember Cavallari?
Here.
Councilmember Mead?
Here.
Councilmember Steckler?
Here.
So with council permission, we'd like to move the presentations up ahead of audience communication. Ryan has to go coach a soccer game. Is that okay with council? Good. Thank you. So, Terry? Geez, you're kind of buried back there. Why don't we try up here?
Good evening. Thank you very much, Council, for allowing me time to come down here and see you. First thing I want to do is thank you very much for your service to the city. I spent 17 years sitting on that dais, and we got a lot of really good things done for the city. And I do appreciate that I averaged about $5 an hour on the city council. That's probably might be a little more than you're making now. And so certainly you're not in it for the money. You're in it because you care about the community. And I want to make sure everybody understands that. Mike, you've been around a long time, and Mark, so have you. So thank you very much for your service. I'm here tonight just in the spirit of partnership. When I was on the city council, I was always asking the county for help, and they weren't always able to provide it. In fact, hardly ever. So I decided that when I got up to the county, if I won, which I did, that I was going to look for partnerships in the district. And as you know, we've partnered with you since over the last 4.5 years that I've been on the council, and we're partnering again. So I'm bringing a $50,000 ceremonial check. The routing number's right, but I doubt that the bank will cash it. But anyway, this $50,000 is for 35th Avenue. I know you're rebuilding that. That's a major north-south corridor, as you know, not just for Mill Creek, but the surrounding communities, a lot of commuters and people just trying to get to work as well as get to school. Thank you for taking the leadership on that. I know Senator Hobbs was a rock star, and I think he got over $5 million towards that, and the city is obviously putting money into it. So thank you for tackling that. Thank you for getting it done, and I believe it'll be done in the spring. Is that about right? Okay. And then just to let you know, lastly, the when I was on the city council, I asked the county, can we widen 35th? I said, we can handle the extra housing if you just widen the road. And the county said, no, we don't have the money. So once I got up there, I was bound and determined to solve that. So once I got there, I asked, can we widen 35th? And they said, no, now the houses are too close to the street. So I said, what's the next north-south corridor? They said, we don't have one. I said, how could you not have one? Well, we had to lay off our long-range planners in the recession, which is a true story. They had to lay off 300 employees. So I said, I want to get that resolved. And so we hired traffic consultants and engineers and decided that we're going to create another one. That'll be 43rd Avenue, which doesn't even exist right now. So the sequence of events are we just redid Seattle Hill Road from 132nd down to 35th Avenue. Now we're working on 35th Avenue from Seattle Hill Road down to 180th. That'll take 2 years. As soon as that's done, then we're going to widen 35th to a full 3 lanes to North Creek High School heading towards Maltby Road, and then it'll be 4 lanes south of Maltby Road. In parallel with that, we're going to put a new road in. It'll be 43rd Avenue to the east, and that'll go from Maltby Road all the way up, tying into Sunset, and then tying into 132nd. That'll divert about at least 30% of the traffic off 35th, which will create an equilibrium so people can get to work and get to school on time. It's going to take a while, and the reason it takes that long is we can't just shut all the roads down because there's a lot of neighborhoods connected there. So you have to have flaggers and one-way traffic at times, and so it takes 2 years for each segment. But at the end of 4 years' time, we should have 35th and 43rd built out. Then we're going to do Granis Road, 196, and widen 180th from Bothaverd Highway all the way to 35th to five lanes. So if you add all that up, that's a $91 million investment. And I believe that's about $80 million more than the county has ever invested in roads between Mill Creek and Bothell. So it's a significant investment, and that's what you get when you have a former city council member up at the county council. You get a lot of cooperation. So anyway, thanks again for allowing me to come down here and present this. And I wanted to ask if we could get a picture. That'd be great.
Got to get a picture of that.
Oh, also, I want to tell you, we did one other thing. I did talk to your interim city manager, Bob Stowe. We had some historical preservation money available. I called him up and said, do you have a project? And he said, we do have a project. And so we worked it out, and we've allocated about $12,000 for your project, and that'll get done. At least the design will get done for that by the end of the year. We'll reimburse you for that up to $12,000 as well. So thank you.
Awesome.
$5 million. I think it's thank you, Senator Hobbs. Also, is the sign straight?
Pretty much. Okay, 1, 2, 20. One more camera to go. Thank you.
Thank you.
Out, you see what you get to look forward to? Become a councilman, you get your picture taken a lot. It's great. Yeah.
Good luck with your game.
Okay, so now we'll move on to audience communication, and we have people who have signed up, so we'll begin with Robert Fletcher. Name, address, and 3 minutes.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor Pruitt and the council for letting us approach you about the upcoming budget. My name is Robert Fletcher. I reside at 15800 32nd Avenue Southeast in Mill Creek, in the city of Mill Creek. I'm a board member and treasurer of the Parks HOA in the city of Mill Creek. We have 254 homes. The purpose of my comments today are to advise the council that concerning the city's problem with trees and the planter strips, and to request that we have tree replacements in the upcoming budget and the five-year plan. The Parks HOA is about 20 years old, and or the subdivisions, and it has about 325 of these planter strip trees in the city right-of-way or the city property. The city has a serious problem with these trees, and we'll see that it's a result, or it's been shown that it's been a result of the previous approved standards for trees and landscaping design and the approvals by the city back in the early days of the late in the 1995. Our HOA Architectural Control Committee has repeatedly reported that there are majority of the homes have a serious problem with about 264 of these trees that are impacting, you know, seriously impacting their, are affecting the homes. And these trees are, have very shallow roots. They don't go down and they raise the sidewalks. They're unsafe, buckling, obstructions, lawn deterioration, both in the planter strip and also in the home. Irrigation systems are failing and trees are in more risk of failing and falling. You have handouts of the photos, and if you look at just typical would be number one, you can see the rays. I won't go through this, I don't have time in my 3 minutes, but this is solid roots, number two, and here's a tree that's, the sidewalk was replaced by the city, but they just chopped off the roots. The roots are on the surface. These roots don't go down. The tree's in danger of falling. This is, I took this yesterday. Here's another one on number five, which are, it's just solid roots, and they're raised. You can't mow. It's dangerous to mow. It's unsafe. There's good news, though. There's good news. In 2014, the city conducted a study and by using a certified arborist consulting firm to address the homeowners' concerns about these planter strip trees. And the arborist's report, which was very detailed, reported that the city that the tree species had very shallow roots, and that was the wrong choice, and I'm using their words, and not suited for the narrow strips that are found in the parks. Somewhere between 2 to 4 feet are the strips areas. In 2015, following this study, the city implemented a pilot project to replace 18 trees. And that would be in your handouts on page, or on the photo number 11 and 12. And it was very successful. It's been 3 years. And they used new planning. They used the revised planning standards for these new plannings for the pilot project. They also put root barriers down, and they used the new species of tree, which is very similar to the other tree, except these roots go down. They don't go sideways. And so finally, the only feasible, cost-effective, long-range solution is to replace the planter strip trees. And we request that the city include tree replacement funding in your biennial budget and also the five-year plan and even a long-range plan. So thank you very much.
Next up is Ed Strowman. Hi.
Absolutely. Name is Ed Strowman. I reside at 16327 33rd Avenue in the parks at Mill Creek. I'm a former president, board member, and beautification committee for the parks at Mill Creek Homeowners Association. And so I just want to compliment and amplify what Robert was saying. We really want to engage in partnership, continue the pilot that we've already established, that, like we said, was very successful there. And so we really would like to propose, the ask, if you will, is to put about 13 trees a year over the next 15 years. That will get us to about 194 trees that are remaining that have not been replaced. And so if we do that over this period of time, about $26,000 a year, or about $52,000 in your biannual budget is what we're asking for. So this will basically, the solution will address some of the safety concerns with people tripping over these sidewalks as they walk. Right now, even on your website right now, the Public Works group actually has a picture of a workman shaving the sidewalks, right? So as part of the ongoing maintenance, and we're basically asking that we kind of partner together, collaborate to identify 13 trees per year and develop a program to basically replace those and the sidewalks there. Kind of in finance, so I'll just kind of lay out some of the finance stuff here. So if we do this, this basically is a liability sitting on the books now of about $700,000. Future value of that is about $1.4 million. And that's at a cost for the pilot program, which was about $3,700 each for each replacement tree. So the HOA has been able to acquire the same services, similar, for about $2,000 each. So the net incremental savings, if we were to do this now over this 15-year period partnership, would save about $685,000 to the city if we take this approach and partner now and just program it out into the future. And so this will kind of meet your CIP priorities, primary criteria of preventing or eliminating public hazards, and it's essential to maintaining current levels affecting public health, safety, and welfare. So that's kind of our pitch. We'd really like to partner with you to address this concern in our community there. All right. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it. Yep.
So I'm actually speaking for a neighbor because he's not able to make it. So do you want me to give information for both of us? Okay, my name is Ann Chamberlain. I'm a Mill Creek resident at 15926 32nd Avenue Southeast. And the person that I'm representing today is James Steibeck. He's at 15720 32nd Avenue Southeast in Mill Creek. And he states here he's a 20-year homeowner in the parks. So thank you for letting me speak on his behalf. To the members of the City Council, I will not be able to attend your October 2nd meeting, but will offer my comments regarding the planter strip problem at the parks HOA. The planter strip trees are not our trees. They were planted by Murray Franklin and approved by the City of Mill Creek back in 1995. These trees were the wrong trees to be planted in the tight-fitting areas where they were placed, which of course can now be seen in surface roots and numerous raised and ruined sidewalks and driveways. These trees are planted in the city-owned strip, which is an area not part of the tax property and is not the responsibility of the homeowners on each lot. The homeowners should not be co-opted into paying for a problem which they did not cause and for which they do not have responsibility. The city needs to fix the problem they caused. Lastly, I had to chop one tree down in the front of my home. This is James speaking, by myself to clear the root problem. This was done for my lawn and planter strip root issue, but also for curb appeal. But we did have to pay for a permit through the city to allow us to remove the tree. I would like the council to be advised once again these trees are not this homeowner's responsibility. In the Division 7 area of the parks, HOA, a few years ago, the city replaced quite a few of these trees. However, it seems the city had stopped when this council did not provide annual replacement funding for the rest of their trees. One last thought. Once again, sidewalks and adjacent planter strip areas and lawns are city property. Why does the city shave the sidewalks because of buckling from the city trees instead of replacing their trees? According to my HOA bylaws and easement provisions, I have to maintain shrubs around the utility boxes in our yard and my lawn because they are in our yard and maintain the city planter strip lawns by watering and mowing. The city tree roots are making this maintenance impossible to accomplish. Just giving my input, please include annual city tree replacement funding in your biannual budget and five-year plan. And I would just add, my sentiments are a little bit different. However, this issue does affect our yard as well. We do have a tree that has buckled up and it's growing into our yard and is making it difficult to care for our yard. So thank you for listening. Appreciate it.
Next up is John Turner. Is that Turner?
My name is John Turner, 15812 32nd Avenue Southeast. Same issue. I won't go through the whole thing. I'll just say that I've lived in the house since it was built. The last time I was in this room was because we won the Mill Creek Gardeners Award. And right now, after three attempts at our front yard, this is what it looks like. Trying again in the fall to get the grass to grow because no matter how much water you pour in it, the roots from these trees completely invaded our yard and just takes all the water out of it. So this is my third attempt. I put hundreds of dollars in it in the spring, trying again in the fall. I have a picture of what it used to look like. If anybody wants to see, sorry, I didn't have time to print this out, but you can tell from a distance it was green, and it's not anymore. So I appreciate any help you guys can provide. Thanks for listening.
Good evening, extended family of the city of Mill Creek. My name is Herbie Martin. I live at 14119 42nd Avenue, Southeast Mill Creek, Washington. On September 27th, thank you for making copies too. On September 27th, I submitted this letter regarding RCW 73.04. Something that's near and dear to my heart. I have submitted documentation before and it has become missing or misplaced. I was assured when this was submitted that it would be on the agenda, and as I look and see, it's not on the agenda. So this evening I would like to give a copy to the city manager, please. What is this pertaining to? As of March of this year, 2018, the city of Mill Creek, we've established a charter with the AMVETS. And according to this regulation, it says that several national recognized veteran organizations shall have access to the buildings at all times, office or meeting hall. And right now that is not occurring with our national organization. So I'm leaving this letter with the council and with the city manager to address this as soon as possible, because we're growing. We're meeting once a month next door at the annex, but we don't have access to this building if we want to do auxiliary things, if we want to meet with other veterans throughout the day or the hour. And that's what that's why I'm here tonight. I guess my first major concern is when I turned this into the lady behind the counter, she assured me this would be on the agenda, and this is not. So I'm at your mercy.
Yep, briefly. Hi, John Raymer. I live at 831 148th Street right here in Mill Creek. I'm a retired military guy. And I'm a member, originating member of the AMVETS 2018 post. We meet in room 201, as Herbie said, over in City Hall North, and we thank you for the use of the access to that room. The code that Herbie found and is bringing up it states that cities are authorized to provide a free room to a nationally recognized veterans organizations, which AMVET is. So basically, I'm here on behalf of the commander of 2018, Paul Fredrickson, to ask the city if we can have one of the offices up on the second floor next door. So we have, as Herbie said, more than just the once-a-month meeting hall, but we have an office where we could store stuff and do veteran support and stuff like that. So the request to the city is, can we please have one of the empty offices and use it and do veteran support stuff? That's basically it. Okay, thank you.
Yes, Mayor, we are ready. So we interviewed Guy Armfield for one of two vacant positions. He's, like many of the candidates that we see down here, outstanding, lots of energy. We think he'll be a good fit for the board, and I'm recommending that we appoint Guy Armfield to the Arts and Beautification Board.
Is that a motion?
Yes.
A second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Interfund loan from the general fund to the surface water utility fund.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Our finance director will give a brief presentation regarding this interfund loan, which is $500,000 from the general fund to the surface water fund to account for the Sweetwater Ranch stormwater infrastructure failure, as well as the rate analysis and the consultant design package that will address many of the surface water issues that we have in the city over the next several years. And so I'd ask the finance director to provide some additional information to the council.
Bob had alluded to, this is just an overview of the interfund loan. It'll give you a snapshot of where we're at for operations for the end of this biennium. And as we look forward to 2019-2020, I thought what I would do is just acclimate you. This is kind of a busy schedule for those of you that aren't used to looking at this many numbers. Here we have our 2017-2018 estimate. This is what we think is going to happen. And then we have 2019-2020. We start with our beginning fund balance. This would have been at 12/31/2016. We had $600,000 in the fund. Typically, this fund supports itself with revenues, and the expenditures going out approximate what the revenues are coming in. For 2017-2018, we had $1,460,000. That's a little bit inflated from our surface water fees that we collect as we got the Department of Ecology grant for $50,000. You can see that our expenditures are 2.1. We're all familiar with the catastrophic failures over at Sweetwater Ranch, which I think was about $850,000 or so. So that would leave us with an ending fund balance of $29,000 or almost $30,000, so we would be negative and not be able to operate that fund. So what we're recommending is a $500,000 loan from the general fund. It will carry interest at the LGIP rate of 2% for now, unless that starts to decline significantly. So that would leave us with an adjusted balance of $470,000 as we head into 19 and 20. Also accommodate the expenditures for the FCS rate study along with the design package that Petit is working on. It'll bring us to a fund balance up here at 470. You can see we have our revenues. These are not increased for whatever the rate study might say. These are our existing $78 that we've been charging since the inception of the fund, which I believe was back in 1999. We've got expenditures of almost 3.3 slated for next year. So obviously, as FCS looks at the rate and looks at the construction that's needed to facilitate our F failures, we will need to infuse more money, and that will be part of their study that they do as to how much that rate should be. If we do nothing, we would be at a negative 1.4, and we obviously can't run an enterprise fund under that scenario. So just a quick snapshot of where we're at with that fund. Questions?
What? Thanks, Peggy. Could you go back to the chart? So you mentioned that there's Petit is working on some more stuff for us, and FCS is working on the rate study. Is that – I'm taking that first column to be a projection of where we think we're going to be at the end of the biennium. So are those two numbers – are those included in the 2089573, or you're saying
– Yes, they are.
They're in there. Okay. So therefore – assuming those come out where they are, we're going to be 470 going into next year.
Yeah, the problem with the surface water is the money when we receive it from the county is lumpy.
Yeah.
And so what we're anticipating is to, if all goes well, we'll have an increase that we will present to council that will be approved in November. But the impact of that won't be felt until I believe we receive our first check in February, and then it goes every 3 months. But the fund is going to need some seed money to continue to keep that going.
Yeah.
Now, if we get into a situation where $500,000, you know, they don't need it, we have up to 3 years to loan the money. Otherwise, we get in trouble with the SAO. I don't have any prepayment penalty associated with this loan, so they're welcome to pay the general fund back if necessary, if it just looks like we don't need it. But I thought it would be conservative. We don't have to come back to the well twice, and it should be sufficient to facilitate our needs, at least to get us launched and kicked off into the first quarter.
Yeah, thanks. And so what really, for a future discussion, hidden inside of that expenditures number in the past, you basically said the 1410 that came in every year was about enough to cover ongoing operations when things were normal. But we've got this new
extra. Yeah, we've about $100,000.
Yeah, but now we've had this $800,000 this year, and next year their 3292 includes what Pertit told us might be the big. Guess for the big one. So there's two lines in there. Part of it is an ongoing operations thing that we've always got. $78 has always covered that. But now we're talking about another phase where we got to look at replacing old capital that's 40 years old.
That's right. And in 17-18 biennium, there were a lot of things that we didn't do. Catch basin.
The cleaning.
We usually do, which is about $300,000. We did half of that.
Okay.
Staff turnover. So we actually, the number, this $2.8 million, if you take out the
$850,000. Thanks.
The recommendation, Mayor, is for Council to adopt the proposed ordinance establishing the interfund loan.
I'll make the motion.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? All those in favor?
Hold on. We have a comment.
For the benefit of the audience, what we're doing is we're borrowing money from our general fund, our stormwater fund, and we're agreeing to pay it back over 3 years. Could take up to 3 years. We're going to spend $43,000 a quarter to pay that back. It's a mortgage for 3 years.
Right,
and so the rate we've the LGIP is the local government investment pool. That's what we're required to. That's what we earn on money we have in the bank. So that's what we're required to pay ourselves. So it's a fair
transaction because this is an enterprise fund. So we have to treat it like a business. And at that rate, at $500,000, it's about $16,000 in interest that the general fund will earn.
And the good news is it still is Mill Creek money. It's not going to an outside bank. That's the best thing is we're borrowing it from ourselves instead of borrowing it from a bank. So this is still Mill Creek money. It's just different colors of money. This makes a lot of sense. I think it's a good idea to spread it out over 3 years because we don't know what's going to happen, but I think it gives us some flexibility. And we will have to plan for the budget, the quarterly payments as part of our budget, regardless of what we do capital-wise. But I agree that this is a good way to go. So I'm fully in support. Thanks.
Aye. Next up is estimates of revenue and expenditures for the current 2017-2018 budget, preliminary 2019-2020 budget estimates.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. I want to call upon the city's finance director again to walk us through this session this evening. There's no action requested tonight. This is simply for information only, and it's to provide you with a snapshot or preview of where we think we're going to finish this biennium and the preliminary expenses as they have been estimated by the department directors for 2019-2020, along with our projection of revenues for that same period. Later this month, you'll be receiving the recommended and balanced budget that I will submit. Staff is still continuing to work on that. And so, again, later this month, you'll receive that information, and we'll have deliberations. You'll have deliberations about the expenses and the revenues. But, again, tonight is simply a snapshot of where we think we're going to finish at for this biennium and the estimated preliminary expenses by each of the departments, as well as the revenues that we're projecting for the future biennium. So with that as an introduction, I'll turn it over to the finance director.
The purpose of this discussion is to provide an estimate as required by law on October, the beginning of October. We are required to provide the council an estimate of the revenue and expenditures for the current biennium, where we plan to finish, as well as taking a look at 2019-2020 revenue and expenses. As Bob alluded to, this is unbalanced. This is the directors coming together, submitting their budgets. We will be doing another round, as you see when we walk through here, because we are unbalanced at this point. So we have some more work to do. But as we look at the calendar ahead, you can see next week we'll be looking at our proposed CIP. We would hope to adopt that on October 23rd. We will complete our budget and serve that up to the city manager on the 25th. Then you'll get a preview of what the budget looks like, and it will be balanced at that time as we've worked internally to balance our revenue and expenditures. We've got a couple of public hearings based on the budget, as well as any property tax levy, should we choose to go that route. The next event would be the surface water utility rate. Again, we're trying to get that accomplished in a time frame that would allow us to submit to the county by the end of the month so that we can get any proposed increased fees on citizen tax, property tax statement. And then finally, December 14th, we would propose the adoption of the budget. If needed, we've got another session for the following week to do that. So again, I will walk you through this. It's a lot of information on here. We're going to look at 17-18. This is the general fund estimates only. I don't have the other funds baked in here, so we're just focusing on that big, the biggest fund, which is the operations of the city. Here we have our amended budget that we did back in 12/31 of 17, where we came to you and said we've got additional needs for expenditures. It was about $400,000. We also had additional revenue, so we were able to maintain balancing the budget. We had increased it to $25 million. Our expenditures were at $25 million. At that time, the projected balance would have been $6.3 million. And one of the concepts that we'd like to start talking about is these required reserves of 15%. So historically, the city has kept additional money in the fund over and above the reserve that we need. And what we'd like to start talking about is, what do we do with that excess fund balance? We've got a lot of CIP needs that are going on in the city. So what do we do, and how do we employ those resources to best support our citizens? So here is where we think we're going to come in for 17-18. You can see that it is drastically different from what we had amended at the end of 17. Our revenues are doing gangbusters. We think we're going to do $1.8 million more than we had projected at 12/31/17. But also, our expenditures have gone up almost $1.3 million, and I'll walk you through that detail. If this plays out as we've estimated it, our ending fund balance will be $6.9 million. The required reserves would be $4 million, and the reserves are calculated on the revenue. That's our policy, that we calculate the 15% on our revenue, that we hold that at bay. But again, we still have excess money of almost $2.9 million. This slide shows some of those drivers from 17 to 18 as we compare it to budget. The amended budget, sales tax has gone gangbusters. We did almost $1 million more than we had projected. A lot of that was due to construction revenue. I think we have $600,000 in construction revenue related to, largely related to vintage in 2017. That has tailed off significantly in 2018. But also our sales tax related to services and retail is really has been strong. You can see that passports is up $325,000, what we had projected at the end of the year last year. So that continues to remain strong. We're anticipating a finish of almost $1 million, just short of $1 million. We are really hoping for $1 million because that would be a feel good. I think the people in the passport and customer service area do a bang up job with our customers, and I think a lot of that drives business back to Mill Creek. We've got a great reputation. Building and development services are up from what they had projected of almost $265,000. And then some of the smaller amounts, I won't go through all of them, but law enforcement had some separate contracts
related to, I think, PSE, whoever was digging up the roads. They had law enforcement. Now, we have, conversely, an expense related to that, an increase in wages, but SAO requires us to gross up those amounts. We can't net the revenue against the increased expense, which is why you see it on this slide. And interest has gone gangbusters from what we had budgeted. I think we started at 0.42. Now we're at 2%. So that's been a nice surprise. We also have had an increase in expenditures, and one of those increases is related to our equipment replacement fund and our capital outlay. When we had set up the budget initially for this biennium, we had capital outlay, our capital assets, going into our CIP fund, which is in the capital improvement plan or projects. It's really more of a listing of what the projects that we're doing that are over $25,000. We had an equipment replacement fund where we depreciate assets. So if we buy a police car for the first time, it runs through the general fund in a capital outlay. So the general fund feels the impact of that asset that we purchase. But the next time we go to replace that police car, we will have depreciated it, which is more of like a savings account. We say in 5 years we're going to need to replace this $50,000 police car. So we save proratably over the period of the useful life. So we did not do that, and we did not bake that into the general fund. So I am unwinding that. And as a result, that will have result in another $215,000 just in the equipment that we plan to replace that we've already purchased. But we also have additional capital outlay that should be running through the general fund and not in the CIP fund where we initially set it up. So we've unwound that and have corrected that, and that's why you see the increase here of almost $330,000. Our expenditures related to professional services and legal is up about $500,000 for this biennium from where we had initially budgeted. We have the interfund loan that we just talked about for surface water that certainly wasn't contemplated when we did our budget amendments. We've had additional professional services related to ECD as we've tried to hire a building official and haven't been able to do that and have had to use outside consultants. We had one other issue related to the DRS that dates back to 2010, and that was an issue where the state makes it the responsibility of the city for someone that's retired to report to the state that they're retired and that we are employing them so that they aren't paid unnecessarily or double-dipping on their retirement along with the payments that they're receiving from the state. Now, so there was a loophole. We've corrected that. We've put that in our contract because the onus is on us to make sure that person that is retired that may come back in contract with the city, which seems to be fairly common, we don't get tagged with the same situation again. So the increase in expenditures, 1.262. Increase in revenues, we're almost $1.8 million. Then we turn to the 19-20 budget outcomes. These were the things that were laid out when we initially did the call for budget. These are some of the items. One of them was no property tax increase. We looked at the surface rates, so we're planning on doing some sort of an increase, which we'll find out from FCS here shortly. And then we also wanted to adjust fees that are based on actual costs compared to other jurisdictions. Are we in line with what other people are charging? From an expense standpoint, we want to align those ongoing resources with ongoing expenses, but we also want to match those one-time revenues with one-time expenditures. We want to maintain the operating reserve at 15%, and we want to continue to limit the burden on Mill Creek's residents. Another slide with a lot of numbers. This is the general fund as we look at 2019 and 2020. Again, you can see I'm comparing it to what we plan to finish for 17 and 18 and where we think the estimates right now. As Bob mentioned, this is an unbalanced budget. You can see that we've planned to do $28.3 million. Right now, our expenditures, as the directors have circulated them, are 28.5. So we've got a shortfall of $134,000 right now. Even so, if you look at the revenues compared to the previous biennium, we're up $1.5 million. And we'll go through the details so that you can see what makes up that 1.5.
Peggy, before you go on, there's a 15% reserves. The text in here in our policy says of annual revenues, but that's 15% of our biennial revenues. I like 15% of our biennial better.
Right, so it would just split it in half. We haven't gotten to the point where we've got 19 and 20 separated.
Yeah, but I'm saying right now you've got 15% of the total biennial revenues,
mm-hmm.
which is great. Our policy in our budget document from 2 years ago said 15% of annual, and on your previous slide it also said annual. I think it should be biennial everywhere.
I would agree with that. So we'll.
We've got to go back and fix that. I mean, I think it means we've got to fix our policy that was probably wrong last time around too.
Yeah. So we'll take a look. Thanks for pointing that out. Expenditures have climbed too. We had planned an increase based on what the directors have submitted of almost $2.2 million from where our finish is for 2017 and 2018. Even given the increase in revenue, the increase in the expenditures, we still plan to have an excess balance of $2.5 million over our required reserve of $4.3 million. And so, again, we would like to start looking at how do we employ these resources, still take care of our reserves for the general fund, but rather than have those sit there, employ those for some of the infrastructure. And that will be part of our discussion next week as we roll out the CIP. Just to give you a flavor of where that 1.479 revenue increase, we've got no tax levy, but you'll see that there's an amount there of 172. That's the increment from 17 to 18. We will have some construction revenue that we'll be able to charge, so that'll add to it. But this would assume no 1% at this time. Sales tax, I've estimated another $200,000. Now, you might challenge that a little bit. We know that prospectively we might have the farm. That's an $80 million project. What would that mean for us? On our sales tax, the city of the 10.4%, we get 1.1%, so that would suggest it's $800,000, but what you have to do is go back and look at 17 and look what the mix of those sales tax were, and we collected almost $600,000. That's why you don't see $800,000 up there as an increment.
Peggy, what did you just reference? Farm?
Yeah.
The eGov development that we'll be considering in a couple weeks.
All right. Thank you.
One of the things that we would like to propose to the council is to consolidate the recreation fund in with the general fund. I think we've talked in the past how the general fund always supports the recreation fund they usually do $1 million. We usually contribute $250,000. It's a lot of accounting night exercises just to go through, have the rec department by itself, allocate headcount, transfer money to support that fund. That doesn't mean that we can't still look at the margin that the program is contributing, but we can do it within the general fund. We don't have to have another fund, and it doesn't really, in my opinion, seem to serve a purpose at this point. We've also carved off a lot of those community events, the parades, the trunk or treat, all of that, and we're putting that into a different category under communication and marketing so we can track those separately from our specific programs. That's what we would recommend to you. It's for you to decide if that's what you would like. Here we have the $344,000. That's the surface water principal and interest that will be repaid in the biennium. Law enforcement, some smaller amounts are going to go down because of the contract that we have. We can't anticipate what we might come in the future for the police department to be utilized in a private industry. And then interest again. I took interest down because I'm conservative and I don't know what the interest rate is going to be. So we took that down.
Peggy?
Yes.
Before we move on the sales tax, your prior slide showed that we're almost $1 million up on the biennium for sales tax. Is that just all businesses doing better with a positive economy, or is there anything, was Arena Sports driving that? Or?
Yeah, well, it's a couple of things. Like I mentioned, there's $600,000 in construction sales tax that went up. But when I analyze the retail and the services, the trend is up. When that trend goes down, I don't know. So I've been somewhat conservative in the estimate going forward for 19 and 20.
Were we able to quantify what impact on sales tax revenue some place like Arena Sports has been able to have?
I will be able to. I haven't been able to yet.
Okay. Thanks.
And then I present this slide as we discussed. We're not planning on having a 1%. This would be a really great place for me to insert our six-year forecast. I didn't have the opportunity to complete that, but what I want to impress upon you is the expenditures keep going up, and at some point you hit a line where you have the revenue and the expenditures are going to exceed that. We know that headcount contributes to that. But as we roll out this fire contract, we know that each year it's an additional $500,000. So for the next biennium, it's $500,000. The increment in the following biennium is $500,000. So it's no small amount of money that the city will be expending. And I think while we look at the biennium coming up, we need to have a longer view as to what are those expenditures that we're going to need to cover with our main categories of revenue, property tax, sales tax, you know, there's some intergovernmental. And so here is the effect of 1%. And I'll be honest with you, I plagiarized this from Landy because I thought it was a really good chart. But it tells you, it shows you what the compounding effect is over a five-year period. So if we started our base of $6.2 million, which is pretty much where we ended up, and then you leave it flat or you increase it 1%, you can see that the incremental increase over the base is 62 in your first year, and then you get another additional 124, and the cumulative effect of that is 186. And if you go out the 5 years, it's almost $1 million of I would call it opportunity cost. That's really not the right terminology, but that's what we lose if we don't continue to keep up with a 1% increase. Here's some of the revenue and expenditures that are different from where we believe the estimate is going to come in at. Salaries and benefits, the $1.8 million, some of that is a reclass of the recreation salaries as we contemplate pulling rec into the general fund. But of course, it's also our COLAs, which are at 2.25% for AFSCME, 3% for police. It's new hires that we had started in 2018, a deputy chief. We hired an accountant. We've got an HR manager that we've hired, so now we're feeling the two-year effect of it going forward. I alluded to the fire service contract. That's $500,000 up for this biennium. Recreation brings some expenses in it. A portion of that is sitting in salaries, but their operating expenses are right about $400,000. We're moving that into the general fund. We've got a lot of information technology planned as it relates to the building permit department, eGov, some of the city clerk software that she's looking to employ. We have the feasibility study with the sports tourism that Joni's going to be working on in the next biennium. State audit will go up. We only had 1 year of audit. We got a buy, so we'll have 3 years of audit next biennium. Some of the other big heavy hitters, you know, legal fees should go down. We've got almost a $485,000 baked into a reduction. We obviously, well, hopefully aren't going to have to loan the surface water more money. So that's a decrease over what our 17-18 estimates are planned. We did have a pickup. Here's a win for us as it relates to Snow 1-1. We've got $250,000 that our fees are decreasing. I sat in a meeting of finance directors with the Snow 1-1, which is the new consolidated company between Snowcom and Snowpack. And I was sitting next to the FT7 gal who's having an increase for fire services, specifically for Mill Creek. Wasn't too happy, but that's the way it went with the smoothing and how they decided to roll those fees out. And then we have some professional services that we should have a pickup. And again, we won't be entertaining any more issues with the DRS. Here's some of the salary and benefit considerations. I mentioned the 2.25% for AFSCME. Guild is at 3%. The collective bargainings expire at the end of this biennium, so we'll be going into collective bargaining hopefully before the end of the year so that we can get that solidified and roll out at the beginning of 2021. Health benefits, I've assumed a 4.5% increase. I baked this in before I got some newer data from AWC, which suggests that it's going to be 3.5. And then I just assumed 5% increase the following year. In the plan, there's really no assumption for headcount other than a full-time an FTE for the building official. You may recall that in 17 and 18, we didn't plan for that position. We thought we could accommodate it with consulting. And that hasn't really worked out because it's really super expensive. We thought we had a guy that came on for part-time, and he's parted ways. So we are in the throes of looking for a building official. And then I would also say that we need some sort of a combo, and I think Gina could speak to it. You know, there's some things that we aren't doing, and inspections are one of them. You know, we had two people leave that did the right-of-way inspections and building inspections, and those right now are very thinly managed. Here's a look at the FTEs over the period of 2012 to 2020. Charlie put this together. I think she did a great job on it. It shows what was budgeted in green and what the actuals were, and you can see the peaks and the years that are associated with that. 2016, we had budgeted significant amount of headcount. We actually only did 60, but you can see that the trend is going down as we look forward to the new biennium. We do have some asks for professional service requests that are not baked into the numbers that I previously showed you, and these would be some of the positions: a deputy city clerk, a project engineer, a support services supervisor, a lateral police officer, and finally a maintenance worker. Again, those numbers have not been baked in to the numbers I just provided, which show that we're already at a deficit. Expenditures are greater than revenues by about $137,000. Now, again, we have some homework to do to come back together and vet these numbers further to present all of you with a balanced budget. But these are some of the challenges that are before us.
Those are biennial numbers.
How do we factor those numbers right there? Because they seem rather high. I mean,
these are biennium numbers, and they're fully loaded. Health benefits, retirement. It's very expensive. The health benefits, I mean, some of the percentages, you know, you used to be able to bench 30% for benefits. Well, if you have a wage that's $150,000 in a biennium and you're paying $50,000 in health benefits because you have, you know, an employee, spouse, and children, it's very expensive.
So, Peggy.
Yes. Yes. So obviously there would be, you know, the likelihood of that happening is low. So there would be some flux in the numbers, but this is the way I chose to present it, just so you have an idea, because these people will continue. Just gives you a flavor for what the amounts are.
Peggy, the $1.8 million increases in personnel,
uh-huh.
That's all just load?
No, that's not all just load. Part of that is we pulled the rec department in, so you have salaries related to rec, and I want to say it was like $700,000. But then we also have positions that we added in 18 that you don't feel the full effect for when you look at 19 and 20. You know, the deputy chief, we hired him at the beginning of 18. We hired an HR manager. So you only have 1 year of comparison. When you load it up, you obviously have the 2 years that spikes the difference when you look at the variances.
1.8 is comprised of both
additional FTEs and additional costs?
Additional FTEs only in the sense that we hired them in 18 and they're carrying on for 19 and 20. We talked about CIP. We are in the throes of looking at that. We are very excited to present to you a CIP plan that we think is very achievable, that also does some great things for the city. Some of the notable projects are pavement preservation. We've got the East Gateway, Urban Village Spine. We're going to do a study and then also look at the acquisition of right-of-ways and what that might cost.
And Peggy,
yes.
The right-of-way for what? Which portions?
You want to answer that, Gina?
This works. So that portion is right away for the west portion. We're calling it, it will be presented in a future council meeting, but we're calling it phase one.
Okay, but it's on the west side of the EGO.
Correct.
Okay, that's all I need to know. Thank you.
One of the things that we've got baked into our CIP is the planning and visioning for Mill Creek Boulevard. I think that would be an exciting project. Of course, the sports park, which we've talked about for several sessions, should come to fruition in 2019. We're well underway in the design, but won't roll out until 2019. And then, you know, the big surface water infrastructure projects, which will be something new the city has not taken on to the extent that we're planning. Mike?
Yeah, Peggy, thanks. So this slide and the previous slide kind of go together for me. One of the new people that we talked about a couple of weeks ago, and you've got it up there, and I think it's a great idea, I think you call it a project engineer. To me, that is not a general, I'm testing this, this is not a general fund expense just so much as it's a saving on our CIP. I think we're really saying if we had a person who was doing some more engineering, we would spend less money on a lot of these projects, which would have been capital money in some cases. Is that
right?
Well, true,
right.
Or not?
It won't be all general fund, and I'll turn it over to Gina. But I don't know that savings is the right terminology. Like a consultant isn't going to do that work. I believe it's more management. Gina, you can speak further on that.
So I'm thinking more delivery. In order for us to be able to deliver all of these projects on time, we're going to need to have at least one additional project manager.
Yes, okay. But for me, I think it's a continuing long-term need for this city because we've got enough ongoing maintenance things that it makes sense. So it's not a term-limited thing as far as I'm concerned. This your budget to present to us still, but fine with that. But I think it's by having somebody on the payroll that's it's going to be cheaper for us than going to a consultant and asking for all kinds of consulting help to do that same kind of work. I'm not saying it the right way. I can tell by the look on your face. Try again, Gina. Thanks.
So I am not convinced that the project engineer will be able to do design and inspection.
Oh, yeah.
The project management that is tied to each one of these projects will become at least one full FTE.
Yeah, and you and I are speaking the same language. I'll try it again then. So it's the project management part of that. You could go out and hire somebody to do project management on each of these projects. That would not be a cost-effective way to do it. It would be cost-effective for you had somebody on staff who does that.
Correct.
That's what I meant. Yeah.
And
thanks.
Plus there's the ownership factor too.
Yeah, and we're the owners of it too. Yeah, thanks.
Again, here's a quick review of where we're at and what we anticipate doing. This has been a compressed time frame. The directors and all the staff are working very hard. We hope to close the CIP and present that to you next week with the adoption in on the 23rd. We are going to have Bob's city manager budget on the 25th, and then we will start rolling out our preliminary hearings for you and for the public as well so that they can have public input. Any more questions?
I have one more.
Yes.
So, new as a new council, still new-ish council member, the 15% contingency fund. What's the magic about having a 15%? Is that it's recommended no less than 15, but what you're suggesting is maybe we should just keep it at 15 and find a use for the balance. Why would we not want to have
it's a recommended best practice for a fund balance reserve.
Right, to have a minimum 15.
Yes.
But nothing wrong with having 20, 25?
Well, I guess the argument I would make to you as a taxpaying citizen, if We have 15% in our reserves, and we have additional money that we're not employing in capital or whatever the needs of the city are. Why are you going to tax me more? That would be my question to...
As a councilman who's been up here for, what, 6-8 months, I've seen so many cost overruns of 200, 400, 600,000, you know, huge cost overruns that without that type of contingency fund could be quite a challenge to run the city. So I'm really glad we had a good contingency of funds that was there. And I wonder, is that just unusual or is that something?
It's unusual in my opinion, Bob. You can chime in here to keep more than the 15% reserve and not employ that capital elsewhere. The cost overruns, you know, are typically carried out in some of our construction and CIP accounts, not necessarily with the general. Now, money might need to be facilitated from the general. We have an up live and personal example of that with the surface water.
Yeah.
But, Bob, I'll turn to you.
I would say it's high from many jurisdictions' point of view. It would be considered high where you're at today.
The contingency fund that we have.
Yeah, which is approximately 50% now currently of your revenues.
What about the overruns we've been experiencing? Is that unusual or?
Well, certainly the last several we've had this year, those are also unusually high. But we're going to talk about, when we get to the CIP discussion, we're going to talk about what's the appropriate level of reserves should we be utilizing for one-time expenses.
That'd be great. I'd love to have that discussion.
Any other questions, Mike?
I was going to chime in as an old-timer. Mark can help out, too, in the old-timer part of it. But we've had this discussion in the past about with this large, unsegregated, non-designated reserve. And the council, from before my time, just felt comfortable with having this big hunk of money. So they paid cash for the building next door. They paid cash for Mill Creek Sports Park land. I've been an advocate for... That's not a bad amount of money to have around, but it's not all, shouldn't be all just sitting in our checking account. Some of it is for long-term replacement of some of the assets that we're seeing now. And so I think what we talk about is having a general fund reserve of 15% of revenue for rainy day fund, for when the next recession hits and sales tax falls off the cliff. That kind of money's there, and Peggy needs working capital because our income is spiky. I think we also need reserves for capitals. And we're finding now that the amount of money we had in reserves for stormwater was not enough. In fact, it was very little. So I think I'm a proponent of saying, let's take that money and be more thoughtful about how we designate that. So some of it is in your home life. Some of it is for making sure if you get laid off, you got 3 months of salary. And it's also for replacing that roof 20 years from now. And it's replacing, you know, money for the kids' college, those kinds of things. At home, you do that. And I think our city needs to do that, too. I think that's not too much money for a young city who is now getting to the point where things are wearing out. But I think it deserves some explanation because the citizens, you're right. You know, if it's just sitting there and we got more than we need, we shouldn't have it. I have a feeling
we should employ it.
Yeah, thanks.
Well, we know there's projects coming that are going to take big swings out of that money. It's already sort of budgeted for projects we know are coming. One of the things that isn't said, but I just want to chime in on it for the citizens to be aware of, City of Mill Creek is one of the only cities in Snohomish County and in the state of Washington that does not tax their citizens with a utility tax. State law allows for 6% on every utility that you have, including your cell phone. And you can just do the math on what that would be every month if we took 6%. Some of those cell phone bills are $200, $300, $400 a month. Get a few kids on there and whatnot. So while we're talking about this, I just want you to know, when you read in the paper something about our sales tax is the highest in the county or whatever, and it is by an infinitesimal margin, we are saving you a lot of money every month by not imposing a utility tax. And I would like us to consider the 1%, have a discussion on the 1% property tax, because my fear is I don't want to create a scenario where we're not looking long-term enough that we have to impose a utility tax. I want to continue to not have one. And I think maybe talking about a 1% property tax, a $50 to $75 a year increase, maybe $100 depending on a valuable home and a variety of circumstances. Property taxes are really not as easy to break down as you would think. But I don't want to create a scenario where we're not looking long term and then we have to do a utility tax. I'd like to be talking 10 years from now and we still don't have one. That's my thought.
just one of the advantages of the reserves was when the recession hit, other cities around us had to lay off police officers and cut services. We don't want to have to do that. I mean, we like the long-term stability, and I think that that's important. I agree with Mark about the utility tax to be avoided at all costs, and I'm not sure yet about the 1% because I don't know what the surface water fee increase is going to be, but it's going to be substantial. So we'll have to take a look at all of that. But part of the reason for the reserves is we know the economy goes like this. It always has. We're due for a recession, and we want to make sure that we maintain our level of service and protect our employees. Other cities just, I mean, they laid off cops. I just can't even imagine that. So anyway, Councilmember Cavallari.
As far as the discussion goes regarding the reserves, I would certainly oppose putting a cap. I like the whole idea of having a little bit more cash or saving a little bit more if it comes down to it. But if we're talking about the difference of additional monies or surplus monies in the rainy day fund versus raising taxes, then of course I would support taking money from the reserves in lieu of raising taxes. I don't believe the 1%, I don't think it amounts to much, and at this point I'm not really swayed, especially like the mayor says, since we're discussing surface water taxes increases.
Yeah, I would agree with the 1% doesn't amount to much until you look at the compounding effect. Here's what the compounding effect does. In a year that we're at 6.2, 1% is $62,000. That's all we get. That doesn't even pay for people's COLAs. But if you look at it over the period of time, it adds up. The history has been in the last 3 years, I believe we did 2% in 2015. For the 2016 period, we did 3%, so we used bank capacity in both of those years. And then the following year was we were limited to IPD, but it might as well have been 1% because it was 0.9 something. So the difference between 1% and the IPD was $2,500. So for all intents and purposes, we did 1%. So I would just caution you as we talk about our fire costs that are going up, we have to somehow figure out how to pay for that. And while in 1 year, 1% doesn't make much, it does over the long haul.
One of the problems that we ran into, and I think to my coming on, they did not do a couple increases well, but we had like a 6 or 8 year window of no property tax increases because we didn't feel they were necessary. Then when the economy went completely bonkers on us and things got a little sideways, we didn't want to lay people off. We still had medical and salary increases and things going on that we were trying to address. And so we ended up doing some of the bank capacity and doing a 1 or a 2, 2.5, those numbers. And in hindsight, it would have been better to have maybe done the 1 in one of those years and not had to do a 2 later. 1, you get yourself in a weird spot and you can't make that. It's not retroactive. You just kind of fix it from that point on. So that should be part of our discussion. I'd rather do a 1% this year than 2% down the road or 3 or something. I mean, just so we need to talk about it. And the rainy day, the stormwater, I don't want a big increase in stormwater either. It doesn't really matter there whether it's a property tax increase. I mean, whatever the number that we agree on, how we get that number, one pocket or the other, that's still the taxpayer paying it, whether it's a stormwater fee or a property tax increase or a utility tax.
Council Member Todd, then Mayor Pro Tem Holtzclaw.
Just wanted to make sure we floated the right number out there. So, Councilmember Bond, with all due respect, 1%. So typically, for a $5,000 tax bill we all hate, roughly 1,000 of that goes to the city of Mill Creek, order of magnitude, and 1% of that is $10 a year, not 80 or 100. So we're off by a factor of 10. So it's $8 or $10 a year on average, not 80 or 100.
Better.
I knew you'd like that.
Even
money.
A better
Thanks.
So.
On the surface water rate, I mean, along the same lines as Councilmember Bond's comment, as I understand it, that fee was established
almost 20 years ago with, as I understand it, also really no analysis as to how that fee aligns with what our costs are. So when we talk about a substantial increase, there's a little bit of pain for the piper and making sure that we set a fee or have a discussion on what the fee should be more aligned with what our actual needs are going forward, which we haven't done in the past. So it's been $78 or since 99.
Mm-hmm. So brings in $1.4 million in a biennium, $700,000 a year.
I think a county property just across the street, if you're in the county, I think it's 140 something, isn't it? Yeah.
Councilmember Cavallari.
Because the amount collected in the surface water fund is very exclusive to where the monies are spent, right? It's like watching, you know, it's like getting the money for that home improvement project. You know exactly how much you have in there and you budget for that. So that's my rationale behind it, why I would agree with the latter.
I would also encourage you to think about where the city is in its life cycle. We used to be back in the heyday, I don't know if that's 10 years ago or 15 years ago, where we had a lot of building going on. I can see that tail starting to trail off. We've enjoyed a lot of cash through development. You know, I always say cash covers a multitude of sins. We need to start looking out further ahead at what our expenditures are going to be, because those revenues are at some time going to dry up. Thank you.
Good presentation.
Okay, item F will be considered after our executive session. The consent agenda has been pulled by the city manager. So now we're down to reports. Recently, like in the last week, the FCC has passed new rules regarding the 5G technology. There will be some permitting fees. There looks like that if it's an existing pole, we only get 60 days to process a permit. Rental income is limited. So when I met with the city manager, I asked him, if appropriate, to look into making sure that we're ready. Because started today in the NACO, which is a county's newsletter, they were saying about the internet companies, the communication companies, attempting to overwhelm cities and counties, so where you can't even handle the permitting. The difference with the 5G is it's only good for 950 to 1,000 feet, whereas the big towers, you know, go for miles. So they have to have a lot of these boxes, and then everybody has to have their own little box. So there's going to be lots of these little ugly boxes around. But I've asked Bob to see what we can do to be prepared so somebody doesn't show up with 1,000 applications and we're sitting here going, how can we process this? Because the rules are not favorable to cities or counties. I'm not sure we get to do that. So anyway, that's it. Mark?
No report.
No report, Mayor.
No report.
Report.
I went to a very boring meeting. Jared was there too, but he left early. Good for him. Good presentation, but boring meeting after you left.
No report? Okay, so next up is, we have the farmer's market recap. Are we going to do that tonight?
It was simply a report, Mayor, to the staff's available to answer questions that council might have, but no presentation this evening.
Okay.
Question on that. Thanks for the report. It looks like the vendors were concerned, and we've also talked about making some changes for next year to get better attendance, changing the day. I think that's great. You know, I think the Friday noon to 5 didn't make as much sense to me as the Tuesday 3 to 7 sounds a lot better. But I'm kind of curious. People weren't satisfied with what they had this year. They would like to have more next year. Will vendors come back and give us a try? And do we have a metric or a goal for what we want to do next year? I'd like to, you know, we don't have to do it tonight, but I'd like to see us have a target and be shooting for a target instead of just let's hope it goes better. So that's my input on that. I also think we should look at this. It's a fun event, and people liked it, but we also need to look at the cost of doing this. Is the amount of staff time that we put into it? It costs us $5,000-$10,000 in our time probably to put this on. Is that commensurate with what we get out of it versus more concerts at the park or more trunk or treat events or things like that. So just make sure that when we think about this, we look at the staff time that it takes to do this as well. I know we farm a lot of it out to other folks, but I think a lot of staff is busy on Friday and afternoons when this is happening. So I just encourage us to have some metrics. Thanks.
Cavallari?
Thanks, Mayor. Really fast. Good job on the farmers market. I liked what I read there. I thought the all the effort put in it was really solid for the community. One thing that I didn't see was maybe input from the merchants, the local merchants, what Central Market thought of it. I know Jamba Juice isn't there anymore. I'm just, you know, some of the local businesses, what their take on it was, and if they're happy and if they'd like to see it go forward as well. Thank you.
Beckler?
Yeah, I have two things. One, I thank you for the time, but also putting the event together. I think the community would want to thank you, too, for the ability to create something that once again pulls us together as a community, makes us a stronger city. I strongly encourage this and more thinking along this way. I think it was very successful. I think you had one heck of an uphill battle with the day and time. I got to be honest with you. I was aghast at that from the beginning. If we could move it to a Tuesday time, that later time, I think that's a great suggestion. I think it was noted in here there's no other farmers market on that day. Probably not the best day for a lot of people thinking about it, but I think we would have a much better turnout for those poor people who have to go to work during the day and can't come down here, you know, by 5 o'clock on a Friday. So, but I do want to thank you for the time and energy. The ones I went to, people were there, the community was connecting, and that's a big part of what we're all about.
I had to take off work to go, so I would certainly like it. I attended every single one. I'm thrilled with the stuff that I got there. And I hope that, I know we hired a manager, so Mike's right about watching the costs. But I think that you got let down by some of the vendors just deciding not to show up. I know some days there were very few vendors. I think somehow people's expectations that we were going to be like the Pike Place Market and have all this produce at the beginning of the season, and you can't sell what's not growing yet. So hopefully you'll find a way to get more control over the vendors, because I felt that some of them really let you down, just not showing up and not telling you, and that wasn't fair to staff. So, but I did lots of shopping, so. Okay, so we're going to take audience communication next. Any more, please, Carmen? Name, address, and 3 minutes.
Carmen Fisher, 14623 Main Street, B101. I just wanted to say real quick that I would love the idea of the farmers market being on a weekday from those hours, but if you do it on Tuesday and there are also city council meetings, no one's going to be able to park. And I just thought I would mention that.
Thank you. Anybody else? Going once, twice? Okay, with that, we are going to recess to executive session for the purpose of discussion of the performance of a public employee per RCW 4230-110-1G and discuss potential litigation pursuant to RCW 4230-110-1I. Scott, how long?
Up to 90 minutes.
Okay, then we need to extend the council meeting.
Motion to extend until 9 p.m.
A motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Passes unanimously. With that, we are, yes.
Action may or may not be taken.
Action may or may not be taken. And with that, we are recessed for up to 90 minutes. Okay, it is 8:40, and we are back in regular session. Scott?
Thank you very much, Mayor. Last week, you directed our office to get in touch with the attorneys for Ms. Palazzotto and see if we couldn't resolve this, and we did that, and I'm happy to say that tonight I have a signed separation agreement to present to you. We've talked about it a little bit in executive session so you could understand its terms. Last week you also directed me to prepare a resolution that would resolve the action, and I've done that as well. The resolution I will pass up with the agreement. The resolution essentially immediately terminates Ms. Palazzotto's professional services agreement with the city, effective today, and approves the separation agreement, effective today.
let me pass that up. So, with that, you can choose to take action on the separation agreement and the proposed resolution, or do something different.
Could I ask that either the mayor or the city attorney read that resolution? I don't have it in front of me. The resolution itself, you said you gave us the general parameters, but could you read that so we know we're going to be passing judgment on? Thanks.
Well, this will take just a moment. But it's a resolution of the City Council of Mill Creek immediately terminating the professional services agreement of Rebecca Palazzato as city manager and approving a separation agreement, each of those to be effective today, October 2nd. And there are three whereas clauses. Whereas the City Council of the City of Mill Creek previously appointed Rebecca Palazzato to serve as Mill Creek city manager and approved an amended and restated professional services agreement between the City of Mill Creek and Ms. Palazzato, contract number 2017-1391, describing the terms of her employment. And whereas the City Council and Rebecca Palazzato have agreed to an immediate termination of her professional services agreement and entry into a separation agreement defining the full and final terms of her separation from employment with the City of Mill Creek and other related matters, each of which action shall be effective immediately. And whereas the City Council and Rebecca Palazzato have agreed the foregoing actions are desired in lieu of statutory requirements under RCW Chapter 35A.13. Now, therefore, it is hereby resolved by the City Council of the City of Mill Creek, Washington, as follows. Section 1, the City Council hereby terminates the professional services agreement with Rebecca Palazzato, such termination to be effective immediately on October 2nd, 2018. And Section 2, the City Council hereby approves the separation agreement between the City and Rebecca Palazzato, such separation agreement to be immediately effective October 2nd, 2018. This resolution shall be effective immediately upon passage, approval, and signatures hereon as required by law. So this effectively ends Ms. Palazzato's employment with the City. She will no longer, if adopted, she will no longer be the City Manager as of today, and approves a separation agreement that defines the terms of the separation from the city service.
575, Bob?
I believe that's correct, Mary, yes.
Okay, so we have a motion to approve resolution 2018-575.
Mayor, I make a motion that we move ahead with the resolution and the termination of the city manager's contract per the stipulations in the separation agreement.
We have a motion and a second. Any comments? I just have a brief statement I'd like to read, speaking only for myself. Rebecca Palazzato gave much to our community and has done a lot to make Mill Creek a better place to live and work. Most significantly, she brought about better fiscal management of city finances. Under Mrs. Palazzato's leadership, she initiated much-needed administrative change, including balancing the city budget, avoiding imposition of a new utility tax, creating a strategy to develop tourism as a component of economic development, and a new enhanced passport program allowing the city to keep our property taxes lower. It's unfortunate that Mrs. Palazzato will not be part of our city government in the future so she could build on her many past successes achieved here. The council has chosen to go in to follow a different direction for the future. Our future success will be built on the excellent foundation Mrs. Palazzato and the previous council established during the past 3 years that she brought much needed change to our city government. I want to express my sincere appreciation for her efforts. Thank you, Rebecca, for all the success you brought to our city. So there's no other comments. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Passes unanimously. Scott?
We're completed.
Madam Mayor,
if I may address one housekeeping issue, the contract of acting city manager Bob Stowe is going to need to be extended, and we either need to have that conversation or perhaps Scott can engage in that from this point on, now that I've made it public.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the reminder. It slipped my mind. Bob has been graciously serving, even though his contract technically expired about a week ago. But I believe he's happy to have it extended. And you need, as a council, need to decide how long that ought to be, given the upcoming tasks that you have to complete.
We'll bring something back to us next week.
I'm sure we can do that.
Thank you, Mayor. We have some staff here. Thanks for hanging around. I was staff, started with the city of Mill Creek in 1990. When I went to the sheriff's office in 2001, it wasn't because I was unhappy here. I love this city. I'm grateful for the opportunity to be serving up here and feel privileged by the citizens and their trust. I just want to say thank you to the staff and recognize that there's been some unique challenges for some of you over the last couple of years that we weren't aware of at our level. We appreciate you. I value you and your hard work, and I'm grateful for what you do every day to make this city a better place. Thank you.
Well, with that, we are adjourned at 9:47. 8:47. 8:47. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you.